Welcome.
Great. I'll just quickly introduce Steve Awada and company. And this is kind of update intro, fast moving heads up to Central City 2035 and the North Northeast Quadrant plans.
Okay, great. So, thanks, Tim. I'm Steve Awada with Bureau of Planning and Sustainability. I'm the supervising planner for the Central City team and the Urban Design Studio team. We're here today to kind of give you an update on where we are with Central City 2035 and the North Northeast Quadrant planning plan with ODOT and the I-5 Broadway Wide Road plan. So we're close to the end of our planning process. We'll have documents ready for Central City 2035 and North Northeast Quadrant in the next month or so. In terms of overall effort, we're updating the 1988 Central City Plan. And of course, the Design Commission has been pretty important in implementing various elements of the Central City Plan through design review, in terms of especially the regulations that we have in the Central City. And so we have over 25 years of experience in working with the Design Commission, Planning Commission, Landmarks Commission, as well as the community, developers, and architects in the Central City. We have numerous amendments to the Central City Plan, including the creation of the University District in 95 and the River District, the South Waterfront Plan, the West End Plan, and the North Pearl Plan. So we have a body of information that we could build from. And so we started this effort with regards to Central City 2035 in May of 2010. So we're about 2 years in that planning process. We hope to have a final concept plan that Elisa here will be describing along with Mark in terms of the urban design concept. The North Northeast Quadrant plan started with our advisory committee in September of 2010, and we have a draft plan that we just finished yesterday, and Carl Lyle will be here to talk about that. And so in terms of kind of our process, it's really three steps in our planning process. The first one is kind of a broad overview. We're calling it the Central City 2035, looking at a broad framework for the whole Central City. And again, Lisa will just be describing that. And Troy Doss is here. He's also the senior planner involved with the planning effort. And then today we have eight sub-districts in the Central City, downtown, South Waterfront, Lloyd District, Lower Vina, Century Side, River District, University, South Waterfront, and Goose Hollow. Yeah, thank you. And so for our planning purposes, we divided the Central City into four quadrants, and we started the North Northeast Quadrant as one of our first ones in part to partner with ODOT and take an opportunity with ODOT to look at the freeway in conjunction with the North Northeast Quadrant plan. Again, Carl will talk about that. And so we'll be looking at all the quadrant as part of that the planning process. So we'll be done with the North Northeast Quadrant hopefully by this fall. And then we'll start the next two, Southwest and the Northwest Quadrant, which will be downtown, River District, Pearl, Goose Hollow, and South Waterfront, hopefully towards the end of this year or early next year. And then the Southeast Quadrant, being Century Side, will be our last quadrant, roughly in 2013, 2014. And the last element of our planning efforts will be actually to amend the comp plan and the zoning amendments in probably 2 years. So the issues like the bird-friendly design will probably be part of our scope of work as part of the code amendment process in about 2 years. And so that's kind of a quick overview. And Lisa will walk us through the Central City 2035 concept plan.
Good afternoon. I'm going to talk a little bit, as Steve mentioned, about the concept plan. So the concept plan is what we're using as a tool to lay out the policies and the urban design direction for the next 25 years. We're building off of the 72 plan and the 88 plan and coming up with something that really addresses the needs over the next 25 years. It'll have three big components to it, the concept plan. It will have a policy framework, a strategic direction, and urban design concept, but it'll also work through updating district plans through the quadrant work. We'll do implementation as the last phase, as Steve mentioned, and then also provide general direction for all the other investments that will be going on in the central city. So to get to the development of the concept plan, we've had kind of two main stages that we've worked through over the last 2 years. Starting in 2010, we formed an advisory group that kind of helped us scope out the project, set big issues and topic areas and things that we should be discussing with other groups. So that led us into a symposium series, which I think some of you might have been involved with. There was, I think, 13 events just based on different topic areas. We brought together a range of people to talk about the big policies and the issues and explore ways that they can be addressed in this concept plan. We got a lot of great feedback and participation through those events, and that really helped us refine down what we were doing for actually setting the policy direction. And we also had some other public outreach and open house events. So since the end of 2011, and actually through now, we've had a steering committee. Their final meeting will be in July, and they've helped us narrow down those policies and get them really tight and sharp and focused on what we actually want to be accomplishing through the central city. We've also had a series of urban design workshops, which Mark and his team have hosted. And there was a charrette hosted by the AIA, ASLA, and APA, I guess so, week ago, and there was some really great thinking of just people coming together talking about the big urban design issues in the central city, and it was really supportive of the work that we've done thus far. So we're hoping to have our draft this summer of the actual concept plan. I'll talk a little bit about the timeline later, but also have plan adoption this year. So as Steve mentioned, we have a huge plan area. So the concept plan itself covers the whole entire central city, and then we've broken up into the four quadrants. You'll also see that there's some adjacent study areas, which are outlined with a dashed line, that are close to and have a strong relationship with the central city. So these are just areas we're looking at, seeing if there is an opportunity or a synergy that exists there where they may need to be included in the central city in the future. So they are truly our study areas. So through North Northeast Quadrant, they've been looking at Vancouver Williams and the north part of the Banfield Portal, for example. So this just is a little bit of our timeline. It's slightly outdated. Things have shifted just a little bit to the right, which tends to happen. But you can see the concept plan and the Northeast Quadrant have been running concurrently. And then we'll be doing Southwest and Northwest concurrently as well with the final wrap-up of Southeast. I talked about earlier, there's three big components to the concept plan, what I like to call the actual meat of the document. So the strategic direction is that we are a center for innovation and exchange, and that was refined down through the advisory group and the steering committee to help us get to that succinct vision for what we really want, how do we want to focus our efforts. We have a policy framework, which I believe you all received a copy of in your packets already, and then the urban design concept, which Mark handed out a copy of and then is also up on the wall. We'll talk a little bit about in just a minute. So the policy framework has five big areas. When I was talking about the symposium series earlier, we had quite a few more topic areas, and what kind of happened through that process and also the work of our steering committee is we realized that we didn't have to have a siloed approach to everything. So what you see reflected in these topic areas is an interconnection between numerous traditional planning things. There, the regional center, for example, talks about mobility and travel and tourism and also economic health all being tied together to making the actual regional center successful. You'll see housing in neighborhoods doesn't just talk about housing, it talks also about the greater community, how to make places livable for people and have the amenities that they need there, and how to make a diverse array of housing really available in the central city as well. Again, the Willamette River, in 88, it really was talked about its recreational focus. There wasn't, or even a focus of just bringing people to the river. There wasn't a lot of discussion about environmental health or the economic importance of it. So now we're trying to address those things all together. I'll let Mark talk a little bit about the urban design policies in just a minute, and then also the environmental health. We're talking not just about really the effects on the environment as we've looked at them in the past, but how buildings and infrastructure can really have a positive impact, how we can change those things in the central city, and also impact the health of the people that live here and visit here. So those are the main policy framework areas. So you guys have a copy to look at as well, and you can kind of look at those in a little bit more detail. They're being refined right now through our steering committee. We have a tentative endorsement and are hoping to give them final edits at our next meeting in July, and I'll talk about the timeline after Mark has presented on the urban design component.
Thanks, Lisa. So I'm Mark Raggett, too, with the Urban Design Studio at Bureau of Planning and Sustainability. Thank you, Pointer. Thank you, Carl. I just handed out these diagrams that are also plotted very large on the wall, just in case you can't see the 8.5 by 11 in front of you, or this map. There's two diagrams here. So there's two small diagrams, and hopefully with the intent, we have an intent of creating a 3D diagram too. We have a lot of tools now that we didn't have back in the 70s and 80s we'd like to use to help illustrate these diagrams, and I'll just walk through them real quickly. The first one is this what's intended to be very schematic and conceptual diagram that hits on the three big moves or big design ideas. This one came about because we started off getting into the weeds with the second more bubbly diagram, and we're told by a subcommittee that we created of the steering committee that Elisa just talked about, specifically on the urban design concept issues, that we'd gotten into the weeds too fast. You need to pull out a sec and look at the big ideas. So that's what this diagram is intended to reflect. And those three ideas are a central river. So like Elisa said, back to the 80s, the Willamette River runs through the middle of the central city, and we think that we could sort of do a lot more to increase the diversity of experiences both on it and adjacent to it, perhaps capitalized by two big bookend moments. I think we just lost a battery. We're losing battery in my pointer here. But a north and south end bookend experience. Thank you. There's another one. Another point. So this is just to locate you, Rose Quarter. So Rose Quarter, PPS Blanchard, and sort of U.S. United States Postal Service site, North Pearl District, sort of a north end bookend, and a south end sort of around OHSU, Schnitzer campus, and sort of across OMSI. So kind of two moments of sort of river embrace. So how can we kind of really come down to the river with some vibrant, high-density riverfront districts? In addition, a series of bridgehead. These have been referred to by many different names over the years. The most recent one is Shoelaces. So how can we have a lot of redevelopment opportunity at many of the bridgeheads along the Willamette River. How can we kind of encourage redevelopment of those sites and bring more people down to the river and cross it and go across the central city every day? So Central River is the first theme. The second is we have a series of distinct districts are in the central city. They're all important today. Some of them have gone a lot farther and are sort of on their way and have a direction and maybe won't see as much transformative change. Examples of those are a lot of the Pearl District, downtown, maybe big chunks of the Central East Side. But there are a lot of other areas that sort of have areas where we'll see maybe a lot of change. You'll hear about one in the Lloyd District a little bit later. But we have a long way to go in South Waterfront, and there may be some new ones like around this OMSI area where we'd want to think about new change. All of those we'd like to think about more of an east-west orientation, again, both to the river and out to sort of make broader regional and citywide connections. That's sort of that distinct districts sort of notion. And the third is this public realm idea of a connected public realm, and that's sort of symbolized here by this loop. To date, in the 70s and 80s, we've been looking at that high capacity transit mall, which sort of does about a C of this O, this new O here. So we have Holiday, light rail coming in, transit mall over here, then down and across, and then heads off here. The new streetcar loop, though, along the MLK Grand Corridor presents sort of a neat opportunity for a new unifying loop of sort of commercial, retail, maybe very active urban place along the streetcar loop. This is a broad sort of, this width of this arrow is supposed to say that we could have maybe more multimodal, maybe there's a ped bike trail that's inland. If you imagine sort of the river loop trail and sort of the opportunity that presents, is there a way to get another one of those trail loop systems sort of adjacent to this sort of retail busy streetcar line here? Maybe that's Southeast 7th and the Central East Side with a new connection here across the Banfield, and maybe utilize some of the park block space here on the west side. So sort of the transit mall as well. These arrows are wide to sort of say that there's a broad range of connections there, but maybe it's a diversity of experiences. So those are the three big realms here, three big moves. And again, the next diagram, if you want to click down. This diagram has more detail. And again, this is where we started. This has three sort of key roles here. One is to sort of take that pretty schematic concept, like Elisa said, is probably going to be refined a little bit, maybe made even fuzzier and more conceptual. But to take that and bring that to the ground, Secondly, through the darkest areas, it's supposed to highlight in some of those areas of change. Again, it's the whole, to reemphasize, the whole central city is very important. But sort of where we're seeing change now is maybe at the edges. So again, at the edges, those darkest gray areas is where we're looking at for the next 25 years to see a lot of change. So where are the areas that might change? And third, provide some ideas and a little bit of specificity for testing by that upcoming quadrant work. This sort of, these bubbles here can represent what you're going to see in more detail and what's on the wall behind Catherine over there, the two diagrams for the northeast quadrant, Lower Albina and Lloyd. And we're going to see the rest of the central city, though, still has yet to come. So this diagram provides a little more specificity on the ground to be tested and, again, further refined as we go through those specific quadrant planning efforts as well. So these lines and these bubbles aren't necessarily going to hold exactly where they are, but this gives those quadrant planning efforts a place to start. The list of bullets on the left here is sort of where we're at. And, again, like Elisa said, we have some tentative buy-off from the steering committee on these policy areas, again, to kind of support those two urban design concepts and those three main goals. And I won't dwell too long on this list of bullets, but again, you can see bridgehead redevelopment, regional corridors and connections, experimentation, innovation, historic resources and districts, neighborhood transitions, street diversity, signature open spaces, and bridging barriers. These are sort of, again, through that process that's been multi-year process now, and again, some of the people in this room have been a part of the workshops, the open houses, et cetera. We've heard a lot about focusing on a lot of different parts of the central city, strengthening a lot of the existing places and experiences that are there, but how can we introduce new experiences and new types of places for people in the central city? So that's kind of what our policy focus is on that particular issue. I would just say, again, to emphasize that charrette that happened on June 7th that Elisa responded to, these two diagrams were presented for sort of testing and refinement and more thinking at that charrette. And that charrette was an AIA, APA, and ASLA. It's a kind of a new formal version of the urban design panel that was traditionally just an AIA sort of entity. And so this is, in terms of, urban design as a profession is sort of a multi, sort of, you know, again, is a blending of a lot of different professions. So I think, it makes a lot of sense, those three professions coming together. They had sort of a kickoff. This was kind of a kickoff charrette event to kind of test the concepts and the big ideas present in these two diagrams. And overall, there was a lot. James McGrath, who kind of set the whole thing up, said he likes to emphasize that it was ratification and amplification of these sort of big ideas. So they're very supportive of sort of what's presented in these diagrams and moving forward, again, with some opportunity, again, for refinement. So I think I can close out there.
So I'm just going to run through our next steps and kind of where we are in our timeline. So we obviously have a briefing with you guys today, and then coming up in July, we also will be visiting Landmarks Commission, talk to them a little bit about the things that interest them specifically from this proposal. We will be having our final steering committee meeting in July, which we're hoping to get the endorsement of the policy framework as well as the urban design components for the concept plan. Then after the steering committee, we'll be pulling all those pieces together and wrapping them up into the actual package of the concept plan, which will go out for public review and comment in August, where we will have Planning and Sustainability Commission in September, followed by City Council in October.
So I guess the key here is this is still a concept plan. Our intention is to request a adoption by City Council by resolution, so it will not be change to the Central City Plan until the city proceeds with the comp plan process, and then we'll have a formal ordinance to change the Central City Plan. And also, Mark was describing, we're going through the different quadrants. This provides the overall framework, and at the end we'll kind of reassess where we are with the overall framework and make any changes based on what we learn through the individual quadrant plans so that they all sync up together. So that's kind of the overall scope here. And if you have any questions, and then after that we'll proceed with the north-northeast quadrant overview.
Any questions?
There was also some information about some changes to I-5. So is that a separate process, or is that part of this process in the packet that we got?
This is only half the presentation.
Oh.
So hold it around.
Oh, okay. All right.
We'll be short. We'll talk about
that.
Okay. Any other questions? Okay.
Okay. So are we... get set up for the Northeast Quadrant Plan. As I mentioned, we just finished the draft of the Northeast Quadrant yesterday. So this is, oh, I could take it off.
You want me here?
Thanks.
Let me stand. This one has battery.
So I'll do a quick introduction, and Carl will run through the North Northeast Quadrant and I-5 Broadway-Whitehall Plan. So as mentioned, this is our first of our quadrant, covering both Lower Albina and North Northeast Quadrant. And I think the interesting challenge over the last 25 years is we've had quite a bit of public infrastructure investment in the Lloyd District with light rail, now streetcar, the Rose Quarter Arena, and then the street improvements and so forth. But we haven't seen the kind of redevelopment that we've seen in the Pearl District, for example, or South Waterfront. And so this was kind of an opportunity to kind of rethink the overall plan, as well as sort of recognizing that the freeway has been a kind of significant issue in the Lloyd District. ODOT, back in the late 80s, actually had proposed a more standard treatment of the freeway, which a big widening of the project, what they call big braided ramps on both sides of the freeway. At that time, the city said, no, not quite. It didn't quite fit the city's image in terms of kind of a more, in terms of the urban design issues, land use, and so forth. And so as we were updating this quadrant plan, ODOT was looking at potential improvements to the I-5, I-84 interchange. And it goes back to a key issue coming out of the Central City Plan, and that at that time, the Central City Plan says, well, maybe the whole East Bank Freeway should either remove or be relocated. And Mayor Katz in 2004 organized a freeway loop advisory committee that was chaired by Dr. Toulon at Portland State and had a pretty broad group. And that committee basically said that the freeway I-5 should stay, but it should at some point in time be relocated off the river. How and when was undetermined, but it did say that this interchange, this segment of I-5 between I-84 and I-405 was a problem area that should have near-term attention to it, along with the area just south of here in the south downtown area. So we had an opportunity to partner with ODOT in this process and do a joint effort. And I think the idea here is that whereas the Central City Plan had a heavy focus on relating land use urban design to transit infrastructure, we had an opportunity to kind of rethink how we deal with the freeway in this quadrant here, and try to promote both high density development, more pedestrian and bicycle access, as well as transit, while accommodating freight movement on the freeway and deal with some safety and operational issues on the freeway, as well as on Broadway-Whitler. So that's kind of a quick summary here, and then Carl will kind of go walk us through the plan.
Okay. So what I'm going to do is, Steve gave us an introduction. We'll talk just a little bit about the sort of the history of recent history of development in the Northeast Quadrant, North Northeast Quadrant. Sort of explain a little bit about what the sort of conceptual plan that we developed working with the Stakeholder Advisory Committee over the last year and a half was, kind of how we did that briefly. Kind of make you aware of goals, policies, and actions that are included in the draft plan, which Steve just passed out. We're not going to go through them, but we can just touch on that, sort of what those mean. Give you a real quick overview of what the sort of building height and zoning code changes are that are recommended, and there's sort of tinkering changes in there. And then I'll give you an overview of that I-5 Broadway-Whitler interchange facility plan piece, which I think is also in what we had distributed. So I'm going to go pretty quickly through this stuff, not knowing exactly what is sort of most interest to you. You guys should please interrupt me if you want more clarification or if you have questions about anything, and then we can talk about it at the end. Just briefly, we're working in the North Northeast Quadrant. That's the whole Lloyd District, Rose Quarter, and the sort of Lower Albina area up to Russell Street area up in there. It's an area that, you know, in the really the last 50 years saw an inordinate amount of change and really sort of replacement of small scale, kind of fine grain urban fabric, as you can see in the 1950s aerial, with really large public serving kind of regional traction kind of facilities and transportation projects. So huge amount of change seen with Lloyd Mall and the Rose Quarter and the Convention Center and the freeway projects in that period. A lot of displacement, obviously, as well. So kind of went into this project with the goal of sort of recognizing the importance of these facilities and that we need to work with them, but being interested in ways to sort of try and stitch things back together a little bit and make it feel more like a neighborhood, like a city again. So it's kind of a starting place for us. So the Stakeholder Advisory Committee, 30-member committee, pretty broad representation, a lot of transportation folks as well, since we were using the same committee for the freeway interchange work as well. Worked with us for, as I said, about a year and a half to develop this kind of concept. We have four kind of layers, sort of bubble map layers that kind of capture the sort of main points of the north-northeast quadrant concept, sort of what the plan would then be built on. And so I'm going to go through those four layers briefly, and one of them in a slightly more detail. So this is kind of the land use development type, kind of what are you looking for sort of map. The big ideas here are really not a lot of change in Lower Albina. Sort of the gray indicates a continued importance in employment and industrial area with a little node at Russell Street. Maybe that little node gets just a little bit bigger, but it's basically not a whole lot of change in kind of an industrial sanctuary protection policy there. Opportunity for real mixed use, kind of interesting redevelopment opportunities on this lower stretch of Broadway and adjacent to the Rose Quarter is kind of a big idea, and this is going to come back quite a bit. Recognizing the importance and need for these big regional facilities, the mall, convention center, the Rose Quarter. You know, we've just finally, I think, sealed the future of the Memorial Coliseum, or at least assured that that's going to be renovated, and we're going to have that facility as a useful arena for the next, whatever, another 50 years. So finally, we don't have to argue about what to do with the Coliseum anymore, at least for a while, which is great from my perspective. And then, you know, neighborhood Main Street kind of stuff on Broadway and Widler as you get further east. A real office core, sort of office and government center kind of area south of Holiday Street, where you have the state office building, you have Metro, and you have a variety of things, Bonneville Power Administration, stuff like that. And then in the center, the big urban opportunity is this sort of central area between the freeway and Lloyd Mall, between really 1st and 9th. And Holiday and up to Halsey-ish, just a little south of Widler, where there's just a humongous amount of development potential that's already on the books. Just a lot of development potential, a lot of redevelopment sites, a lot of surface parking lots, just a tremendous amount of potential to essentially triple the floor space in the Lloyd District over the next whatever the market says is the right amount of time. And then so what we're really talking about was that ought to be ought to have a significant residential community, ought to be a high amenity, really almost like a downtown type of intensity of urban kind of activity. It needs a residential component, also an office component, also an entertainment component. It's just, it should be that sort of really intense urban kind of almost like a downtown sort of place. So that's kind of the land use sort of bubble map. This is really a pretty interesting idea, and I don't know, Mark, have these guys seen this at all before? Have you been here at all? Okay, so, and Mark, you should jump in if I don't get this right, but this is, we're trying to take a much more deliberate kind of approach to the design character along streets. Really, let's not just treat all busy streets the same way because they happen to be busy streets is kind of a starting place for this idea. It's, let's be very deliberate about what really are the civic or the sort of retail commercial, the main streets. The places where, you know, we're going to expect and really demand the most retail concentration and the most sidewalk kind of activity. And then let's take another approach to other busy streets, because we don't really believe that they can all achieve that sort of really intense retail kind of main street character over time, and that maybe they don't have to just be unsuccessful if they're not going to be a retail main street, but we can take a more of a landscape approach, a greener approach, a boulevard kind of an idea to some of those other busy streets. And then, so you see Broadway and Widler, for example, are different colors on here. From a transportation perspective, they're one system. They're a couplet that do the same thing in different directions, but that really the historic Main Street is Broadway, and that Widler is, you know, going to have a hard time ever really becoming that, and that maybe we need another approach for that. So that's kind of the idea there. The other big type here is this type 3 flexible streets, which could really be a whole lot of things, as you can see by where that those faint green lines are on the map. But it's this sort of idea that, and it's fed by the opportunity in the Lloyd District of the large blocks, the super blocks, where you can get a lot of connections, mid-block connections and things, as the district redevelops. But it's the idea that if you can sort of connect these, there are some existing pathways, you know, through the mall, right? Through some of these super blocks already have mid-block pedestrian connections. If as the district develops, you can sort of connect those into a seamless system, so you can actually sort of pass from Sullivan Gulch, maybe through the mall, onto these new connections through these private blocks, onto an improved Clackamas Street, perhaps over this proposed pedestrian crossing at Clackamas, through an improved and reimagined Rose Corridor, and down to some public space at the riverfront, and similarly in other ways through the district. But that's going to be a real amenity for the Lloyd District, a really unique, in Portland anyway, kind of attribute. We don't have that opportunity in a whole lot of places other than Lloyd and actually this little part of the west side, right where we are. So that's kind of the idea there. Some of those could be paths, some of those could be private, some could be public. Some could just be streets that have you know, good pedestrian amenities on them. And that's the idea there. So I'm going to give you just a little bit more on these. So the commercial streets idea, you know, we got Broadway and MLK and Grand as sort of the big regional scale ones. And then at a smaller kind of a neighborhood scale, we have 7th and Multnomah on the map there. What could these kind of look like? We've done a few of these kind of graphics. This is looking west on Broadway from 3rd. Today, it's a great place, but maybe, you know, you could, you're sort of a focus on retail activity, street fronting, businesses, doors, windows, pedestrians in the future. And then I think we have a maybe further out in the future shot, you get a little bit more redevelopment. It's starting to become really kind of a main street worthy of the name Broadway. And even, you know, at night, it would be a place that you would kind of want to go and be an active, exciting sort of place. So that's kind of an example of one of those, what it means to be a civic or a retail kind of main street. The boulevard streets, so this is like Widler or 9th or Lloyd Boulevard that kind of curves around the district. Perhaps much more of a focus on large canopy trees and green landscaping, and maybe even some setbacks and some changes to the way we sort of encourage buildings to relate to the sidewalk, to allow for more kind of greenery, to create interesting and pleasant places, like maybe is it Harrison right out here? Which is a busy street, but it certainly isn't a retail street. It's not a bad place. It's a nice alternative to trying to just sort of take this one-size-fits-all approach to busy streets. So that's kind of what's suggested there. We've got a few examples of how maybe that could look over time. Widler looking east from 9th. You know, so this is suggesting you're getting some redevelopment here along this idea. On the right side, you're actually getting a little bit of a setback. You're getting a little extra landscaping. You're getting some pretty big canopy trees. Maybe a little further in the future, the other side redevelops. Again, you're not necessarily getting, you know, active storefront retail. You are getting, you know, you're getting doors and windows. Maybe those are live-work units. Maybe there's other things going on in there. There's some retail, but there's maybe some office spaces as well, and everything's kind of set back. And you've actually created a pretty nice street environment that isn't really only because of that sort of idea of being a retail street. So, and then a few examples of what flexible streets could look like. This is 6 looking south from Wasco. So maybe as a first step, it's still just a regular neighborhood street, but you've made some sidewalk improvements at least, and you know, maybe you've done something to activate some of those surface parking lots. When we showed this to the Lloyd District people, they said, that looks like Occupy Lloyd. Right. We don't want that. But the idea is, you know, maybe there's some uses that you can get a little bit more activity, a little bit more something interesting going on in some of those surface parking lots.
Is there a SketchUp food cart now that you can just sort of plop in?
Right, exactly. And, you know, you've got some redevelopment happening on the left here. Maybe further down the road you get some more, and then you actually are ready to, you know, take another step with the street and actually try some interesting materials and some additional landscaping. It's starting to become kind of an amenity. You got residential development kind of facing this flexible connection, and then you can go a little further perhaps in the future and actually close sections of it off some of the time. You can reclaim some of that street for civic events and things like that. So that's kind of that idea. And then this one is a little rendering we had done, kind of, which shows, I think Bob Wood did this, which kind of shows from, you know, from above this approach of, rather than treating this street like this street, like this street, like this street, like this street, let's look at them differently. Let's say, well, this street, you know, Holiday, it's already pretty different. It's the high-capacity transit street. That's mainly kind of what it does. Multnomah has the opportunity to sort of be a big, a commercial kind of a big street in the middle of all this development area. Most of those are new buildings suggested. Clackamas Street running through here as a major pedestrian connection, as a major flexible connection, has the opportunity here to really be an amenity, sort of a development organizing and inducing amenity with a lot of green features and things along it, and perhaps even some, hopefully some future open spaces kind of linked together along this Clackamas connection that perhaps can even get over the freeway. And then Widener and Broadway you treat somewhat differently, but even though they function as a corridor. There's Clackamas. So this is the notion of we're going to need more open space in this area if we're going to see serious urban development. Particularly the residential component, and we're going to have to develop a strategy to try and link those together. It'd be nice if they could be along a Clackamas roughly alignment so they can kind of correspond with that Green Street flexible connection idea. There's some other places where we're going to want to see open spaces in the future. This is the Blanchard School site. This is the Thunderbird site in front of the Memorial Coliseum. And then this is our green systems layer, which is kind of a catch-all, kind of a holding place for the Lloyd Eco District's effort. The Green Street planning that's going on, the district energy system, which is proceeding in the Lloyd in the Rose Quarter, trying to link up with the Convention Center now, and there's a lot of synergies between these ideas of improving Clackamas as an amenity, but also as a district energy spine, perhaps, or as a rainwater quality corridor, and a variety of other things. So that was sort of those are kind of the four layers of the concept that was developed. So. Perhaps the most important part of the quadrant plan draft that you've got now, that I think Steve just handed out, is Chapter 3, which is really the district goals and policies piece. These are the things that are going to become eventually, once we get through comprehensive plan periodic review, essentially the updated Central City Plan goals and policies for the Lloyd District and Lower Albina. They cover a whole series of different topics, as you can see in the bullet list there. And include some suggestions of performance targets and lots of actions. I'm going to give you just a little tiny bit more information on the zoning stuff and the height limits that we've talked about changing in the next couple slides. Oh, and there's some urban design diagrams. Did you just talk about these, though? The Lloyd and Lower Albina ones?
Yep.
You didn't. So, I referred to them. So as you know, the Central City Plan has an urban design diagram, concept kind of diagram for each sub-district. And so in this document, we're proposing new ones for the two sub-districts we've been working on. Lower Albina, which, as I kind of was explaining, you know, pretty much sticking to the industrial future there with your node at Russell Street. We are looking at expanding that node a little bit up Russell Street. It kind of stops halfway right now. The big move here is that this plan does suggest that we should change the zoning for the school district's Blanchard site, and in fact, if we're going to do that, it sort of suggests let's go ahead and put it in the Lloyd District, really make it part of the Rose Quarter development opportunity, mixed-use kind of development opportunity instead of the industrial character of Lower Albina. So that's reflected here. There are a couple of flexible connections kind of suggested that we were talking about, but in the industrial area, there's a little bit less interest in doing a lot of that, obviously. So that's kind of the Lower Albina concept. And then the Lloyd District urban design concept is, you can see the various different elements, sort of the greatest hits, Mark likes to call them, from the layers that we were just talking about. So the major new focus on this urban area with its parks, with the Clackamas alignment, this focus on streets and streets of different types, Widener and Broadway, and the various different elements that we were talking about.
Oh, this might be premature, but how many conversations have gone on around Holiday Park itself and what might be going on along the edges of that park? I mean, the concentration seems to be about a block away from there, so.
Yeah. The big opportunity at Holiday Park is this huge, the four-block, super-block service parking lot immediately to the east. Mm-hmm. And the mall's frontage along the north side of Multnomah.
Right.
And, you know, we've talked about it quite a bit with them. It's all controlled by the same owner.
Mm-hmm.
So it's a little bit of a, you know, I think they want to do the right thing. They haven't figured out how to
right.
do it.
But yeah, I mean, the ironic thing is that it's all controlled by the same owner, and yet
right.
no one seems to own that park. You know,
right.
it really feels like a neglected space.
Yeah.
And a dangerous space to a lot of people.
Yeah, no, I mean, yeah, we've certainly talked about the need to change the development character all the way around it. There's not a whole lot we can do really in terms of zoning or kind mm-hmm. of actions to make that happen other than to keep kind of working with Glimshire, the folks who own those properties, and trying to encourage the right thing to happen there. But yeah, I mean, it's a huge amenity. It's often seen as more of a liability when you actually talk to folks in this quadrant, which is pretty sad given that it's one of the largest sort of formal open spaces we've got uh-huh. in the central city. Great trees, and you know it's really nice. But
yeah, and it's almost, I mean, unfortunately, I've heard it almost used as an argument against more park space in the area, which is a shame.
Right,
it shouldn't be that way.
Okay. Yeah. So on zoning, so existing zoning designations, you got your industrial, Lower Albina, little tiny mixed use area right around Widmer Brothers. Most of the Lloyd District has downtown zoning, essentially, CX, commercial, you know, downtown zoning, with quite generous floor area ratios and even height limits. There's a few little places where there's something else going on. So the places we're looking at making changes to the base zoning in the north-northeast quadrant are this a little bit of an expansion of the mixed-use area along this part of Russell where it doesn't quite keep going. In this Vancouver-Williams corridor here, there's pockets of it's RH, which is a high density residential zone, but it's in a really mixed area. Only about half the structures are in residential use there. There are a lot of small businesses, some pretty interesting light kind of industrial creative things going on, and those uses are challenged by their existing zoning. So we're looking at a more flexible zone in there, in this case EX, which kind of allows everything. So that was something that was suggested by the Neighborhood Association. And we've been supportive of it. It's also an area where there's a lot of interesting historic fabric, and actually by making this zone change, we think it actually increases the likelihood that those old structures you'd like to see preserved get reused adaptively and have another life. It also slightly reduces the overall development potential in that area.
Hey, Carl, do you just want to talk about the study areas? Like, I don't know if you talk about that in Multnomah, though.
So this area right up in here, Vancouver-Williams corridor, and this little area out here past 16th, are not in the central city today. We added them to the study area boundary because we knew there were some kind of zoning moves that we could consider, and it, particularly in the case of this Elliott sort of triangle in here, because of the proximity to the interchange work, we wanted to make sure that was included. So just going through these other zoning changes briefly, this is the Blanchard site, changing that from an industrial zone to what we're proposing is EX, but a very flexible zone to sort of be part of a development opportunity focused on North Broadway here. In the central core of the Lloyd District, there is about a 5-block area that has high-density residential RX zoning now, and essentially only allows residential development. While we are saying we would like to see residential development in this whole area, this particular little blurb of RX seems a little bit unnecessary to us, frankly, in terms of the whole place. We'd like to, what we're proposing is basically removing this, giving it the same zoning, but then applying broadly a series of incentives for residential development over the whole sort of central Lloyd area. And actually, only 3 of these blocks are really redevelopment opportunities. Others are already developed. So it's a pretty small move. There's a little bit of opposition to it. We're sort of working on that conversation still.
What's the opposition to it?
Just a concern that we're kind of moving away from the goals of residential development in that area, which I don't think is what we're trying to do, but there has been some concern about that.
And before we move on from the slide, mm-hmm. there are these little properties that are essentially, and it's a little hard for me to tell at this scale, it's a little blurry, but you have a bunch of blocks that are kind of split zoned there at the northeast edge.
In here?
Yeah. So is yeah. That represents the existing.
This is existing right? zoning. Yeah. We're not proposing to change the existing zoning in here at all. We are proposing to change the height limits north of Broadway through here, which I'll get to in just a second.
Oh, okay. Can you tell me about the nature of the difference between the zone change from one side of the block to the other, though? Like, what's allowable in the
in this area here
versus what's
so? What you've got up in there is you have you have this the CX, the commercial zoning, all the way along both sides fronting Broadway.
Mm-hmm.
But then on some of these blocks in Irvington, you have the back half of the block, the north half of that block between Broadway and Schuyler,
mm-hmm.
With a residential zone. In that
high
case,
density residential?
Yeah,
or?
It's high density residential.
Okay.
Yeah, apartments.
So in terms of redevelopment rights, they're equivalent except that the one side is just residential and the other has the commercial component.
Right. Yeah, they have the same floor area ratio.
Okay, that's great.
And height limits. Height limits are set by another map, which I'm going to show
sure.
in a second. And then the last little change is there's a little bit of messy zoning. You can kind of see how messy it is in this little circle over here at 21st and Multnomah, where we're essentially proposing to rezone that to also be the commercial zone, but not within the central city, so just at a base 4-to-1 FAR, and just hopefully improve the likelihood that site's going to redevelop at some point. And then, so on building heights, these are a little hard to see, but you can kind of see this big blob in the middle is where kind of most of the building height is. Today, you can go higher east of Grand. That's sort of, you can get bonuses east of Grand to go up higher, up to 325 feet, but not west of Grand. There's really, you know, no sort of, it's all just 100 over here in the Rose Quarter, Rose Quarter. And then it kind of scales down to the neighborhoods. This is the same thing in 2D. So the highest area here, 325, sort of 250, sort of a big area of 100 feet maximums. Today, you can actually go up to 125 feet with bonuses a full block north of Broadway in the Irvington Historic District. That's not seen as a real positive by the folks behind the Irvington Historic District. So we're looking at changing that. So proposed heights are on this map, really trying to take rather than this is existing again, so this seemed pretty arbitrary to us. We didn't really understand if we're trying to create this sort of big new urban place around the front door of the convention center in this central part of the Lloyd. We didn't really know why we wanted to be more generous on one side of Grand versus the other. So we took a kind of another approach, which is, well, let's create sort of a center point where we'll let you go, you know, as high as you want or very high, whatever. It's kind of in that sort of 100% corners of MLK and Grand and Holiday and Multnomah in there at the convention center, and then we'll scale it down from there. So then we'll create kind of places we're making changes. So there's that one. Let's take an approach of trying to create a real urban place and some excitement at the Broadway Bridgehead adjacent to the Rose Quarter, trying to balance out the episodic nature of what goes on in the arenas. With you know more urban development, hopefully some residential and some office and some other things that have sort of a regular daily life along that section of North Broadway. So as part of doing that, we're looking at being a little bit more generous on a couple of blocks. This is actually only two blocks. It looks bigger than it is. On the sort of two blocks closest to the Broadway Bridge and then stepping down from there to the neighborhoods. What's proposed here by increasing the heights at the Thunderbird site isn't outright increasing the heights. And actually, all of these, I should say, are sort of inclusive of bonuses, and it says up there. So we wouldn't necessarily allow by right any of these heights, but when we get around to sort of retooling the bonus program and trying to figure out what types of amenities and programs are the highest priorities in different areas, we would sort of allow you to get up to these heights using those incentive programs. So in the case of the Thunderbird site here, this is the Memorial Coliseum. And this is the Thunderbird site. Today, you could really build the whole thing out at 100 feet, given the FARs. You could essentially block off the Rose Quarter from the river under today's development regulations. So what we're proposing is essentially letting you go higher, but only in exchange for providing public open space in front of the Coliseum. That's kind of the concept there. So that's the way we would set that one up. And then on this neighborhood edge, this sort of you got historic Irvington up here, or Irvington over here, and Elliott over here. We're looking at a more aggressive step down. We're looking at going from 125 down to 75 rather than in this area. It's all 100 today, and over here you can actually go up to 125 north of Broadway. And in the center, you can go to 175. And these blocks today, we would be sort of changing that a little bit to go from 175 down to 125. This is kind of gas station land in there, if you know where that is. It's kind of at the intersection of Broadway and
Grand
MLK, exactly. So those are the changes proposed. This is just another way of looking at that neighborhood transition. So blue line is Broadway. The strip that has the blue on here is what we're changing, kind of pushing that down to get a little bit more of an aggressive step down to these historic neighborhoods. And then you can see the area that has a little bit more is kind of where the commercial corridor comes in anyway from MLK and Grand. right in there. And then you can't see it very well here on this projector, but the sort of the big stuff is down by the convention center. So I'm going to shift gears a little bit, talk briefly about the freeway side of things. The freeway project is a pretty innovative partnership. We haven't done a lot of projects like this where we're working this closely with the State Department of Transportation. But in this case, in this particular area where we're doing a land use plan and development plan for, you know, these areas that have a lot of development potential on both sides of a major freeway, it's a huge opportunity. And we just saw this as a real opportunity to improve conditions across that barrier, although they don't like us to call it a barrier very much, of the freeway. And if they're doing work in all these different places that run right through the middle of our study area, that presented some pretty interesting opportunities to improve connections, improve development conditions, and do some interesting things. So these are not my slides, but I'm going to go through them anyway. So a little history of the I-5. Basically, the short story here is there hasn't been any changes or improvement significantly to this stretch of the freeway since it was built in 1966. Still the original two lanes, still the original bridges, and so on. Obviously, there's a lot more traffic and congestion now, and there's a lot of accidents in this section. So there you see the highest crash rates in the state. Couple of things going on. Lots of traffic, obviously. Substandard or small shoulders. Lots of on-ramps and off-ramps really close to each other, much closer than they would typically be built today. And then, you know, limited connections across the freeway as well. So the way that the sort of recommended, I don't know what we're supposed to call it, recommended I-5 interchange project, which is described in the facility plan handout, which you got. Steve, that one.
You had that.
That kind of covers it. Yeah. The way that was developed was through a big public process that we did over the same time frame. We started with a series of charrettes and had over 70 different sketches and ideas, and had to kind of sort them all through, and went through a kind of a narrowing process with the Stakeholder Advisory Committee, and basically got down to this one proposal, this one sort of recommended set of things to consider. So this is the kind of overview map. This is the sort of project area. Essentially, the project area is from where the 405 ramps come in right up here, through the Rose Quarter to where the 84 ramps leave. And then in this whole area, there would be shoulder work done and auxiliary lanes, so additional lanes just from where these ramps come in to where they leave. So you'd go to a 6-lane section instead of a 4-lane section through this area and have some shoulder improvement. It does fit in the existing right-of-way, so they don't need any more space for that. Essentially, the way it works is today there's a lot of sloped edges to the freeway, and those become more vertical retaining walls to create the space down in the bottom for the auxiliary lanes and shoulders. This box shows you where the bulk of the work is and the big opportunity from our perspective about stitching this stuff together. So we'll zoom in on that and look at some of those elements. We can start with the 3 here. This is really a huge one from our perspective, something we've been trying to get the state to look at seriously for a long time, which is the opportunity to cap the freeway, to essentially lid over the freeway at the level of the surface streets. So essentially the freeway is under not underground so much, but it's buried or it's covered in this area, and then perhaps again in this area. And then perhaps there's an opportunity to even look at what if you did the entire stretch here as a lid. And I've got a couple of graphics in a second coming up to show you what some of those opportunities of that lid are. Another interesting thing that's happening in here is a pretty interesting way to sort of rethink the way that Wheeler Street works between Broadway and Widler. So essentially you have two kind of one-way streets or a big backwards kind of a street or a English style, it's been called as well, kind of an arrangement in here. But what it essentially does is it lets these big heavy moves of Broadway trying to get on the freeway do this and get on the freeway. This ramp has now been relocated to Widler instead of coming straight out of the Rose Quarter. So you no longer have to go all the way around and down to get on. So it allows that to happen at the same time this other big move is happening, which is coming over here and trying to get on and going like that. So at the same time that those two things can happen, this 40-foot, 30-foot big landscape kind of mixed-use path median thing can also be open, connecting this your Vancouver and Williams bikeways down through here on paths down to the Steel Bridge area. So that's a pretty interesting arrangement, pretty innovative, very different, but has a lot of potential to clean up the way that circulation works and reduce the amount of kind of going around and around that happens in there now. Another big thing, this is a sort of placeholder here for this Clackamas pedestrian, bicycle pedestrian bridge, which we talked about, kind of being a big element and a real opportunity, and one that this commission may get to see some elements of, which I'll mention in just a second, or some relationship to with an upcoming development proposal. North of Broadway, this is a reconfiguration of these local streets. So the Vancouver and Williams and Broadway and Widener stay kind of where they are, knowing that this is a bad intersection where the off-ramp comes and hits Vancouver at Broadway. We looked at a whole series of different options trying to move that and get rid of that problem point there with the 5 points. And we were just not really able to do it. It was a push too far for the community and for lots of other folks to figure out what to do with this Vancouver traffic if it wasn't going to come through there. So it stays, you know, and we do the best we can with it. But what's being recommended is that instead of building Flint, today you don't have this bridge. This doesn't exist, this Hancock connection. Today you have Flint, Vancouver, and Williams that all go to Broadway, and there's no east-west connections north of Broadway. So what this is suggesting is instead of putting Flint back where it is, we essentially don't rebuild that, and actually we actually take it out of the block south of Hancock here. And instead, we build an east-west connection that connects Vancouver and Williams via roughly a Hancock connection over to Dixon, over to, this is the school district site, so you're just north of Broadway now. So you have a new local connection. It's not taking any of the arterial traffic, but you have a new local connection which is allowing bikes and pedestrians and local traffic to avoid being in the middle of the sort of what we call the box, the tangle of the freeway on-ramps and Broadway and Widener.
So bikes are leaving Vancouver
to get to Broadway Bridge? So bikes are coming down Vancouver, which is essentially where they're either on Tillamook or Vancouver already. If they're on Flint, they're only on Flint because they've gone over there at Russell, which is just right here.
Or because that's the way the Broadway Bridge.
Right. Right, but so from Tillamook or Vancouver, you're taking Hancock now to get to the Broadway Bridge.
So part of this concept is to eliminate a safety problem, because as you come down Vancouver or even Flint, you're at this kind of problem intersection of Broadway and Flint. So by taking out Flint and redirecting it, you can get that traffic away from an unsafe intersection and get a more safer route to the Broadway Bridge. So the concept that we've coin here is that there's a box around the box, so that the fearless bike riders will likely stay on Broadway Widener, but for the interested but concerned riders, we give them a safer, slower pathway around the interchange.
Just a few other things on here that are kind of interesting. Recommending opening up Flint between the parking garages at some point to sort of help with the egress. You see you're kind of losing some of the Williams access here. We can open up Flint again between the garages is another little idea. So I mentioned the Clackamas bicycle pedestrian overcrossing. This is just a conceptual rendering of how that could line out. Just doesn't have to be that way. Probably won't be that way, as a matter of fact. But because the off-ramp is now relocated and isn't here anymore, you now have an opportunity to land something like that in that area and tie it into Winning Way and right down to the river and to the Broadway Bridge. Now, what's interesting about this is all private property. It's privately owned. It's vacated right away in here, owned by Legacy. And you actually may see at this commission a proposal for a development on this site in the next 6 months or so. And so we're trying to work with them to make sure that there's a way to enable some kind of pleasant, workable connection through here for this trail at some point in the future.
Part of the design concept, why there's that curve, is to try to get a touchdown on the east or west side of the freeway to avoid an elevator kind of ADA. So part of it is trying to meet grade, you know, to have at-grade landing there.
Is the curve less expensive than the elevator, you think?
And the elevator is a longer-term maintenance problem.
Yeah.
So we try to avoid elevators where we can.
Yeah, okay.
So So I just have a few more slides here. A couple renderings of what the lid could mean. Now, these are very, very conceptual, and I think we're actually interested in pushing more on the idea of some actual buildings out on that lid over the freeway in some key places, perhaps, to kind of really stitch the fabric back together even more. But this one shows, you know, you could use it as part of development and some open space. And there's another one that was done that tried to do more development around maybe a new central, some sort of freeway park idea or whatever. But this idea of reclaiming all this space that just opened a freeway below is pretty exciting, especially in this area next to the Rose Quarter where there's a lot of pedestrian traffic.
So this is kind of a win-win for us. And for ODOT, they determined that building a lid will save them money from a construction staging perspective, because they would normally build a temporary grid structure to detour the route. But by putting a lid, a permanent lid, you could do both, have a detour structure during construction and then leave it in place, and then we would have a feature that is a public benefit in terms of covering the freeway in this segment.
So, series of benefits. It does improve, according to ODOT, safety and operations in this section with the various different improvements. They're looking at 30 to 50% reduction in the crash rate in the area. Certainly improves interface, we think, between sort of the freeway and local streets, puts the on-ramp at the major street, kind of where it belongs, provides a lot of improvements to bicycle and pedestrian facilities and different opportunities. Implementation actions.
There's a series of issues that we have to resolve once we get into preliminary engineering. So, you know, we're still at a very concept level and 1% engineering work at this point. So when we get to PE, where we get to 30% engineering, these are some of the issues we have to resolve. You know, how we deal with the additional crosswalks and signals. We still need to address how van traffic is managed out of the Rose Quarter, how we manage the signals on the freeway system. So, and then continue the public outreach. So these are kind of the kind of ongoing issues we have to address during the next phase of work.
Yeah, so these next couple of slides refer to pages 10 and 11 in this facility plan thing, which is essentially the laundry list of things that we know still need to be worked out. So there's quite a lot of stuff on there, all the things you'd expect to see, parking issues, all sorts of design detail issues, the Clackamas crossing issues, and right-of-way acquisition and so on, or easement establishment. And that's the end.
Are there questions?
I guess there was a next step slide, which seems to have fallen out of this part. But we have two stakeholder advisory committee meetings left in the North-Northeast Quadrant process. We have one next week and where they're going to review and discuss this draft plan, which you just received a copy of. And then we have one final meeting on August 2nd. We hope to go to Planning Commission concurrently with the Central City 2035 work in September.
Okay. Yeah, I think I went and butted in with most of the questions I was jotting down as we went. So,
yeah. I don't have any questions, so it's really great to see all the detail that's gone into the planning. It's just amazing. It's and just the whole idea about capping, is the potential there is really great. It's just great to see that you're looking at I-5 as part of it as well, because that's such a big problem in that area.
Well, what is the potential on I-5?
I think there's going to be a lot more discussion about that. I think the potential is actually huge. A lot of cities are starting to do some pretty interesting things with these caps. I mean, they're always expensive, it's the first time for ODOT, and they keep saying that, but they so far are you know, pretty interested in it. You know, have started out at a place where they were sort of not comfortable with the idea of buildings or private uses on top of that cap area. But, you know, there are a lot of examples, Columbus, Ohio, Dallas. There's places that are doing this that are, you know, theoretically not as progressive as we are with this stuff. So let's see.
It would go a long way, too, to strengthen that east-west connection. You know, we're trying to get people across the freeway, I mean, across the barrier that we call ODOT struggles with, but getting people from that central Lloyd, that dark red area.
What does ODOT call it? Just out of curiosity, since barrier is not a good word for them.
vital, critical regional transportation facility.
Right. But not barriers, are opportunities, so, right?
But just getting, you know, that cap, the Clackamas Crossing, would sort of really help to stitch this sort of area back to the kind of the Rose Quarter, rejuvenated Rose Quarter, and on, hopefully, to the river, and maybe a new open space on the Thunderbird site, you know, that kind of constituent.
This has really been a special partnership we've had at ODOT, where in the past this would have been contentious, I would say. Mm-hmm. But this has been a really good partnership. They've been with us all the way in supporting us. So this is, at the end, this is their document.
Right. They let you put their logo on the bottom of it, so it's a good sign.
And the intention is to go through our public process and have it approved by their Oregon Transportation Commission, which would then set it up for the next step of funding the project.
In the you mentioned the displacement of north and northeast kind of corridor. That, as you guys know, is a big topic all up and down that corridor, starting all the way from the Rose Garden, heading north all the way to Killingsworth and beyond. The, I guess, Emanuel Hospital recently commissioned a study with Gina Woolley. I don't know if you guys know that name, Gina Woolley. She's a developer up in that area. To try to recognize and then overcome a lot of the issues that have been built up in that whole area about the displacement all along there. So Emanuel paid for it because they know they've gotten a lot of heat. They've kind of been the fall guy for the past 20 years, when in fact, after the study, the fingers are pointing elsewhere, actually, not necessarily at Emanuel. So it would be good to maybe integrate her study, which is just now, it's just getting printed soon. Yeah, and it goes down as far south as the Rose Garden. Because in a lot of the zoning, how we all treat this, and rezoning, studies of zoning that got us kind of that area into trouble the first time around. Yeah. So we should probably integrate all of those considerations. I mean, not all of them, but at least the pertinent ones into this conversation now. Because if it just comes out and it's just dropped in the lap of that whole area, it'll probably start the same argument again. So anyways, it was good. It was a good turning point because Emanuel is the one who actually is paying for this. So if they get into the communication lineup with all of us, I think it'll go a long way in the mapping.
Well, we can ask him about that.
Yeah, well, yeah. Definitely. One of our efforts that we did with Kathy Galbraith with Bosco Milligan is to update her African-American cultural resource inventory. Nicholas Sterman worked with her closely, and ODOT actually helped pay for that and put it into a digitized format, so we have access to GIS now. And so that's embedded in our document as well, and it's part of our appendices here. And so we have that inventory, and it's an element that we have some policies and actions related to that.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Well, thank you very much.
Great
and
work.
Good luck
thank
moving
you.
Forward.
Okay.